Hi there, my name is Njerim Bogwa, and I'm the host of Crime and Consequence KE, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Welcome back to season 2 of Crime and Consequence KE. It's taken me 3 months to put out a second episode, but we're here, and that's what matters. I'm really low energy, to be honest, and the whole week I've been so excited thinking about coming back and putting out another episode. But then today, as I sit down to record, I feel my whole body is just... Yeah. Our plays this week are Florence Odhiambo Okinyo, the victim, and John Okinyo Otieno, our accused. And this story takes place on the night of 12th and 13th July 2022. So it's that late night of the 12th of July and early morning hours of the 13th of July 2022. And it takes place in Usigu sublocation, Bondo sub-county, Siaya County, in Kenya, of course. So, on Tuesday 12th, 2022, at about 5 p.m., Brighton Otieno, who was 14 years old at the time, came home from school and found his sisters, Kate and Mackenzie. Brighton was the oldest in his family at the time, and he was in class 8. And so when he gets home and he finds it's just his two sisters, he asks them where their mother was, and the sisters tell her that she was here, but she just left. The mother is identified as Florence Odhiambo, who is our victim in this case. The three of them, Kate, Mackenzie, and Brighton, stayed home alone until about 9 p.m., when their father John Okio arrived and also inquired about their mother. So at the time that John arrived, Brighton was preparing supper for his siblings, and he told his father that he'd also gotten home and he didn't find her, and they didn't know where she was. After John hears this, he says okay. He takes the key, he goes and locks the house from outside. So he locks his children in the house and he leaves. According to Brighton, this is from Brighton's testimony, he came back about 2 hours later at 11 p.m., and the two sisters had slept, but Brighton had still not slept. Remember that John locked the door from outside, so when he opens the door, Brighton testifies that he saw his mother lying at the door, and his father requests Brighton to help him get his mother inside. After they get the mom inside, John asks Brighton to go get water and a sponge, and John uses this to wipe blood from Florence's face and mouth. It's important to note that the reason why Florence could not get herself in the house is because she had been that badly beaten by John. So he asks the son to get a water and a sponge. He wipes blood from her face and mouth, and then he puts her to bed. And he also tells Brighton to go and sleep. Brighton goes to bed, but after he testified that throughout the night, he could still hear his mother crying in very low tones. And I think that's really sad. Do you know what I mean? Let's go on. When he woke up the next morning, John immediately informs him that his mother was dead. And when I was reading this, I really wonder, like, what do you do after that? Once you've woken up in the morning, you're in class 8, you know, you're getting ready for your KCPE, and you saw your dad had really badly beaten your mom the previous night. And maybe this is something that is not uncommon in your household. Because if you've grown up in a household where there was domestic violence, you kind of become used to the noise and the chaos. And at least for me, let's go on to the story. After John informs Brighton that the mother was dead, court documents really don't say what happened to the children, if they were still told to go to school, if they had to remain home. Court documents really don't say. But what we know is that a report was made at Usenge Police Station by the assistant chief, who was identified as Joachim Mjuria, who had gotten word that Florence had died and her body was lying in her matrimonial home. After a report is made at the police station, police officers are sent to the home to go and investigate what happened to Florence. So one of the officers who went to the scene was identified as Corporal Nelson Ariba, and together with other officers, he states that they found Florence lying on the floor covered with a bedsheet. When they started the investigation, they discovered that John and Florence had been fighting the previous night and there was a witness to their fight. Now, the person who had witnessed them fighting was identified as Sylvester, and Sylvester was John's brother. But when the police tried to find Sylvester so that he could come and testify on the fight that had occurred, Sylvester was nowhere to be found. And later on in court documents, we actually find out that they even issued warrants for the arrest of Sylvester so that he could be compelled to come to court and testify, but he quite literally disappeared. He's like, I'm not testifying against my brother. And so he was never called in for, he was never found for his testimony. The investigating officer also testified that in the room where they found Florence, one could see signs of a struggle at the scene, and they also found a few sticks that had been used to beat Florence. They were still in the room with her. He also testified that, according to him, the scene had been interfered with and the body had been moved. Relatives and neighbors also told police that John and Florence would, fighting was just a constant for them in their home. They were always fighting. So after police come, they process the scene. They take Florence's body to Bondo Sub-County Hospital, where an autopsy was conducted by Dr. Rita Opondo on the 21st of July, 2022. As she was giving her testimony in court, she said that Florence had multiple facial bruises and she had a 4x4 centimeter cut around the chin and forehead. On her head, there was hemorrhagic congestion of the skull on the left frontal parietal zone, a sign of trauma, as well as the right temporal occipital zone. No skull fracture was noted. On the nervous system, there was a mild hemorrhage within the subdural space on the left lobe of the brain. And all this jargon basically means that there was a small amount of blood that had collected just outside the brain on the left side. And she formed the opinion that the cause of death was head injury secondary to blunt force trauma. In his defense, John says that Tuesday, he woke up early and went to fix a dog kennel for a neighbor. At around 2 p.m., he says that he got back home, but he did not find his wife in the house. Here's where his testimony and his son's testimony differ a bit, because John says that he stayed home up until 9 p.m., but remember, the son said that he got home at 5 p.m., and their dad got home at 9 p.m. But John says that he got home at 2 p.m., and he went out looking for his wife at 9 p.m. By 9 p.m. when Florence was not back, John decided to go look for her. And he says that after walking about 1.5 kilometers, he stumbled upon Florence lying on the ground with injuries. He says that he went to his neighbor, and the neighbor was identified as Eric Otieno, to get help carry Florence back home. He says that the both of them lifted her and took her home, where he cleaned her up and placed her in the bed. The next day, he woke up at about 5 p.m. and he started getting his children ready so that they could go to school. When he went to check up on Florence, he realized that her body was cold. After he realized that her body was cold, he was like, oh my God, something is definitely wrong. So he rushed to inform his mother and in-laws about what had happened, and then he informed his children, and then after that, they went to make a report at Siaya Police Station, but they were referred from Siaya to Bondo Police Station. But then remember, the police statement was taken at Usege by the assistant chief who made the case there. I'm not very sure whether they made another report at Bondo, or I could be wrong. Maybe Usege and Bondo are the same thing, because I'm not very familiar with the geographical positions of everything. Anyway, John's testimony was taken under oath, and he testified that Florence was an alcoholic who would sometimes turn violent, and it was actually not very uncommon for Florence to be gone and John to go looking for him, and for him to find the wife drunk, to find the wife involved in fights, and he constantly had to intervene between the wife initiating or being involved in drunk fights with other people. He denied that he had beaten Florence at all that night, and he said that in the 12 years that they had been married, they had never had a single day of peace because of Florence's drinking. He also testified that when he saw that Florence's drinking is not getting any better and they're constantly fighting, he decided to marry a second wife, and Florence was aware of this. But after a disagreement between Florence and the second wife, Florence had chased away his second wife. So as he was on the stand, because remember he took a sworn testimony, meaning that whatever he said in court, the prosecution could cross-examine him and ask him questions and try and poke holes in his story. The prosecution asked John if he had any evidence of Florence's abuse, because he said that the reason why him and the wife were constantly at loggerheads is because she was an abusive drunk. So the prosecution is like, okay, do you have any evidence of Florence's abuse? And he stated that he did not have any evidence. He had never gone to the police station to make a report. He had never gone to the hospital with any injuries. But he stated that his second wife had made a report at Usigu police station. When investigations were done and they went to Usigu to try and find any report of the second wife coming to complain about Florence, no such reports were ever discovered. Now, again, as I've said, John decided, you find that a lot of defendants, when they're giving their side of the story, they decide to do an unsworn testimony. So an unsworn testimony is just them basically telling their side of the story to the court, but they're not under oath, so they can be cross-examined. But John decided to do a sworn testimony, so that means that the prosecution could ask him questions after he finished. So when they were doing cross-examination is where they asked him about him having any evidence of the abuse, and also it really didn't go into much detail, which I did not like. But they also say that in cross-examination, John changed his story from, remember he said that he had not beaten Florence that night, so he changed the story from I had not beaten her to I only hit her because I was trying to correct her behavior. But then, as I've said, the court documents don't go into details on, you know, what questions did the prosecution ask for him to change the story? What exactly did he say? Like, they just say that he only said he hit Florence to try and correct her behavior. Which is one of the frustrations that I have with court documents, is that, and also it's really hard to piece together these stories, especially the ones that happen in like really rural places, because they're not going to get any media coverage. And unlike places like the US, where they sometimes have access, true crime people have access to police interviews, they have access to even the police themselves to ask them about the investigation. Sometimes they have access to the prosecutors and the defense lawyers. And you can just, they're able to paint you a picture from the time the crime happened to what the police did, you know, when they arrived, and the crime scene photos. And like, there's so much documentation, there's so much detail that's just not there in Kenya at the moment. You know, the best that you can do, if you ask me, is either get very lucky and have the story like Ivy's story and Monica Kimani's story. Those are very high profile cases, so it's very easy for you to get lots and lots of information on what happened. But when it comes to some of these cases that happen in rural Kenya, there's really not enough information to how exactly investigations were done, who did they speak to. You know, there's not enough information on the court cases, because you find sometimes these cases take a couple of years, but you're reading all that information from a couple of years has been condensed to a 2-page PDF. Of course, they're not going to be able to exhaustively cover everything that happened in the period of time that it took from the arrest to the sentencing, you know. But anyway, so this case was heard before Judge D. Kemei at the High Court in Siaya. The judge said that after considering the submissions by both the defense and the prosecution, he found that the issue for determination is whether the prosecution proved its case beyond any reasonable doubt. For the prosecution to prove the offense of murder had been committed by John, they had to prove the following ingredients. 1, that Florence had died. 2, that her death was unlawfully caused. 3, that there was malice aforethought. And 4, that John was the perpetrator of the crime. Proof that Florence had died was presented via the autopsy report conducted on her body. On whether her death was unlawfully caused, the judge said, it is noted that by dint of Article 26 of the Constitution, all homicides are deemed unlawful unless authorized by the law. The deceased was a middle-aged woman who was in good condition, save for the fact that she had been deeply immersed in alcohol, and which had caused a lot of strife between her and the accused herein, who was a husband of 12 years. The injuries inflicted on the deceased were so severe and which did not give her a chance to survive. The said injuries left no doubt that the perpetrator intended those injuries to lead to the death of the deceased. The accused in his defense confirmed that the deceased sustained injuries that he placed and that he placed her on the bed and slept until the following morning. It is instructive that the accused did not bother to take the deceased to hospital for treatment and only cleaned blood from the deceased's mouth and face with the help of his son. His son, who was the prosecution's second witness, stated that he could hear his mother crying in the bedroom. The evidence of the investigating officer, who was the prosecution's fourth witness, is that they received evidence at the scene that the accused had assaulted the deceased at the road with sticks and then dragged her into the house where the body of the deceased was found the following morning. It's clear that the deceased died due to blunt trauma. The deceased therefore did not deserve to die in the manner that she did. I find that this ingredient was proved beyond any reasonable doubt by the prosecution. On whether the prosecution had proved that there was malice aforethought, the judge said that Brighton's testimony proved that John had malice aforethought before he killed Florence. He said that from evidence, Florence had been an alcoholic and this had caused problems in the marriage. He added that John had opted to bring in a second wife, and after Florence kicked her out, he decided to kill her. The judge said, and I quote, "Indeed, the accused confirmed in his defense evidence that he had been trying to correct the deceased over her bad behavior. The act of correction was obviously disciplining her by way of beating or assault. There was therefore malice aforethought on the part of the accused. There's no evidence that the accused resorted to other channels of redress, such as involving the family members or the clan elder. The fact that the accused could leave the deceased with severe injuries and then attempt to erase any signs of injuries by wiping away blood and cleaning it is a clear demonstration that he wanted to erase any evidence of culpability in the crime. It is instructive that the accused did not bother to take the deceased to hospital despite knowledge that she had injuries. The accused just placed her on the bed and left her to die. I find that the prosecution has proved this ingredient beyond any reasonable doubt." So, long story short, the judge was like, yes, and the prosecution has also been able to prove that John knew that whatever it is he was doing to Florence would cause a lot of harm to Florence or would eventually kill Florence, but he didn't care. Then the judge said, oh my God, I wrote such a long quote. Anyway, he continued, "The defense evidence did not shake or cast doubt upon the evidence of the prosecution, which was overwhelming against the accused. The accused in his defense evidence confirmed that he had gone to look for the deceased and found her lying by the roadside and escorted her home, and thus he was the last person to be with the deceased before her cold body was found the following morning lying on her bed. The accused's alibi defense did not dislodge the prosecution's evidence against him. I find that this ingredient was proved beyond reasonable doubt by the prosecution." And then finally, the judge concluded, "Despite the fact that the prosecution had failed to bring Sylvester to testify against John, the judge felt that the evidence they had presented was enough to find John guilty of the murder of Florence, and he found him guilty on the 28th of April, 2025. So that was just last year. And I could not find any information on whether John has been sentenced yet, but from previous cases we've seen that this kind of crime usually carries somewhere between 15 to 20 years. And yeah, that is the story of Florence Odhiambo Okinyo. Yeah, so thank you so much if you've reached the end of this episode. As I said at the beginning, I'm really low energy and it's taken me a couple of hours to record this, and I thought that if I take breaks then the background noise, because I'm wearing headphones and I can hear it as I speak into the microphone, and it's making my mood worse. But thank you so much if you've gotten to the end of this episode. And I'm supposed to talk about my thoughts on this case. I need to find the statistics, but we do know that femicide is something that is an epidemic in the country. And unfortunately for us as women in the country, we live in a very patriarchal system. And the patriarchy is upheld by how we are socialized. And it's also largely upheld by religion. And unfortunately for us as women, we have a government in place that is not only heavily patriarchal, misogynistic, and ignorant to the issues of women, it's also really highly religious, which I think is very dangerous. And we are living in a country where the president has not spoken about femicide, despite the fact that we've had a whole, you know, there's been ongoing campaigns online. There's been ongoing campaigns in the street. People are actively talking about this. There's a whole movement where the purple movement, where now people are standing up and speaking up against the violence that is being perpetrated against women by men because we are women. And it's really sad because stories like this happen every day. Every single day, a woman is dying. Every single day, there's another Florence. And unfortunately for us as women is that every single day, not enough Johns are put behind bars. They are protected by society. They're protected by their mothers. Ugh. They are protected by religion. They're protected by the government. They are protected by basically every single system that you would think would come to be of help to women is actually redirected, and that support is given to abusers. And a lot of women find themselves stuck in cycles of abuse because we have been socialized to believe that marriage and children are the end goal, and that is where we should aspire to be. Because what is a woman if she doesn't have children? Who's going to take care of you in your old age? What's a woman if she doesn't have a husband? You know, who are you going to be in society if you can't stand and say, I am Mrs. So-and-so? And a lot of women, because of this societal pressure, and as somebody who's turning 30, I can tell you that this pressure is so fucking real. People feel so entitled to your body. People feel so entitled to what the fuck you're supposed to be doing with your life. You're 30, why aren't you married? Why don't you have kids? Why have you never brought anybody? And it's always a little bit ironic to me because I remember growing up when you were a teenager, in the years where you're supposed to start exploring yourself and your wants and your needs and your sexuality, you know, your late teens, early 20s, you're told no. You know, don't be out here talking to people. Don't be out here dating people. Go to school and forget. There's such a rigid structure for what it means to be a woman, especially in Kenyan society. And you find that a lot of women find themselves stuck with mediocre, abusive, unevolved men. Because I have a strong belief, and it's just a theory, but I do not believe that men have the systems, the labels, the ability, the emotional bandwidth to love women the way women love men or love anybody. I do not think that men are socialized to view us as functional, independent, autonomous human beings outside of themselves. I think that men see women as an extension of them, but not in a way that is good. They see women as an extension of themselves in a way where this is my thing, you know? Women are things that I get to choose, and then I take one and I get to own her, and I don't even, I could say so much about this topic, but Yeah, so I decided against going on a misandrist rant because I will say this in conclusion, right? I believe that a lot more women need to take up misandry on a very, very serious level. I do believe that a lot of us also need to continually, on a very continual basis, continue to question our attraction to men. And because it's safer that way, it's safer when you know why you're attracted to men. It's safer to interact with them when you know why you're interacting with them. You know, when you're not subconsciously seeking something in them to fulfill yourself. Because I feel like men can sort of like sniff that quiet desperation that a lot of women have, because as I said, we were socialized to believe that the answer lies in partnership and children and, you know, the right way to do things, right? So a lot of women walk around with a quiet desperation and longing to find the perfect person who will finally come and fulfill them and complete them. And when a lot of them get married or get into relationships, because they know the market out here, the kind of the quality of men that patriarchy produces, women know the quality of men that is floating around out here. And because a lot of them are not willing to admit that we were sold a lie, they end up staying and tolerating and hoping and praying and just waiting for this one that they chose to change, you know. And again, as I said, I don't think that men have the emotional bandwidth or the skills or even the language to love women on the same scale. So at some point when I'm not even gonna go down that road. All I would say to any girl that's listening to this is, in my personal experience, I have found that continually betting on myself and continually investing in myself and continually working on myself is always going to be the best bet that I can make. Because every time I have tried to outsource anything, and especially tried to outsource it from men, it's always the end result is just, it's just never good, to be honest, you know? And so you find that the best thing that you can do is continue to find the resources, the language, the community that allows you to continually invest in yourself and be yourself and know yourself and just grow in yourself. And then everything else will flow as it should. There's no right way to be a woman. There's no right way to express femininity. You just are who you are. Okay, I'm done. I'm gonna go. I'll see you guys next week, for real this time. Follow me everywhere. I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok. Yeah, I'm on Facebook, but like, ugh. They told me to log on to Facebook, and I was like, who feels like logging onto Facebook? Like, what is that even? So, yeah, just follow me on Instagram and TikTok. On Instagram, it's crime and cons, K-E. On TikTok, it's crimes and cons, K-E. And I'll see you next week, for real, for real, for real. Bye.